Good evening. I'm Ira Nadell, and it's my great privilege to welcome to UBC Arts on Air Professor Stephen Toop, president of UBC. An active leader in the arts, Professor Toop is not only himself an author, but equally important, a reader. And in fact, it's reading that's our topic tonight, what and how a university president reads. Greetings.
Great to be here. Thanks, Ira.
Thank you. So let me start with a very simple question. When do you find time to read, given your somewhat busy schedule?
My salvation is plane rides. So I try to take as much as I can when I have especially long flights. But I also try to read almost every night just before I go to bed or before I go to sleep because it just reconnects me a little bit with the rest of the world.
Are you one of these people that has four books or five books on the go?
No, I tend to read one book at a time, but interspersed with some key magazines that I also like to read.
Okay, okay. Do you have a favorite place to read? You mentioned reading in bed a bit and probably in row two on a flight. But, you know, some people...
No, sometimes row 32 as
well. Okay, 32, sorry.
No, I do. I actually have a place in our house on the second floor of our house. We have a sitting room, and I've got a couch there with a really good light, and that's probably my favorite place to read right now.
It's quite fascinating to me that people do have certain areas, certain spaces where they feel very comfortable reading. I think it has to do with a sort of intimacy with the book, whereas on a park bench, I don't feel the same way, or in a waiting room.
No, I can read, you know, if I have to, if I'm stuck in an airport or something, I can read in a public place. But I agree with you. I actually like the tranquility. Sometimes sitting under a tree is okay. But I do have a sense that there's got to be something sort of around me, nurturing me a little bit.
Were you a library reader when you were an undergraduate? Was the library a place you went?
Oh, absolutely. That's changed so dramatically. The library, of course, was purely quiet and couldn't have any coffee or anything else, but it was a great place to read, yeah.
So what are you currently reading?
I'm currently reading sort of a backlog of New Yorker magazines.
I'm in the same camp, right.
I love the New Yorker because I really like the extended story format that they've maintained, and they're almost the only magazine that still does that, at least wide circulation magazine. And so I'm trying to catch up on, I think I'm up to Christmas. It's not too, too bad, but they're also great for plane rides because they're easy to carry.
Okay, but what about a book?
So I'm currently collecting a whole series of books that have been given to me over the last few months, and my most recent read is a book by a Japanese novelist who won the Nobel Prize back in the 70s, and it's was given to me actually by the student ombudsperson here, Shirley Nakata, and she said it would be a really good way of getting into traditional Japanese culture, and in fact it has been. It's both very inspiring and very disturbing at the same time.
It's a contemporary novel?
Yeah.
Okay. I noticed that on your, I don't want to quite call it a blog, but your sort of what the president reads on your website, what I found most enjoyable was that you were critical, that you didn't just simply say this book is about, you actually offered a kind of commentary about it. Now, is that a holdover from your undergraduate or graduate studies?
Probably. I did my undergraduate degree in English history and literature, and I did think at one point of becoming an academic in history. I ended up going into law, but it probably is. I love discussing books, so it's my little opportunity. I can't be in a book club right now because I wouldn't get there very often, but it's a little way of maintaining that joy.
Are there certain subject areas that you particularly like to keep up with?
My reading tends to be fiction, and so contemporary novels I'm very interested in, but I've also been finding myself delving back into novels that I read a long time ago. It's not on What Is the President Reading blog, but just about a year ago, I took up The Great Gatsby again, and I just you know, it just reminded me why some books are timeless. And it was so powerful to read it again and to think about that last scene with, you know, the green light at the end of the pier, this sense of hope and hopelessness at the same time. Great book.
I think you raise a very interesting point, and that is sometimes we read books too young, and you need to come back to them. And I say that to the students repeatedly. You're reading Vanity Fair now, and it may seem just a long, tedious account of somebody who, you know, is on the make. But when you're 30 and you come back to it, or even older, it has a different kind of meaning.
Oh, definitely. And I think that is what probably distinguishes truly great literature, is that it can be read at any point in life, and you can draw somewhat different things from it. I mean, obviously, seeing Shakespeare at 12, which I think can be very profitable, is not the same thing as seeing it at 70. I mean, imagine The Tempest as a teenager and The Tempest as an 80-year-old. It's going to resonate in a completely different way.
Almost frightening, I would think, in some ways.
Exactly.
So if you were able to head off on a holiday, what two or three books would you take?
So books that I've already read that I would want to reread perhaps for the third or fourth time. I love Barry Unsworth's Sacred Hunger, which won the Booker Prize, I think, in the 90s. It's a story of slavery, but it's also a story of sort of moral degeneration in a society. And I found it absolutely gripping. I've reread it twice, I think, and I really find it a marvelous book. A Canadian book that I would want to take, although it's not set in Canada, is Rohinton Mystery's A Fine Balance. It's very Dickensian, and it's somewhat overwrought, but it is such a great story. And the characters for me were so vivid that I, again, have gone back to that book a couple of times. I first read it when I had appendicitis, and I'd had my appendix out. So I actually was lying on a couch in the Laurentians north of Montreal, and I just read it from cover to cover over about 3 days. It's quite a long book, and I was completely enraptured with it.
Well, I can identify with that because I can think of three or four titles, Daniel Deronda being one of them.
Interesting you should say that. I just reread it, and it's, again,
it's a stunning book.
A wonderful book, and actually not that well known in the canon, unfortunately.
But it's one of those books you begin and you do nothing but continue because you're engrossed in it. I think Underworld by Don DeLillo is another book for me.
I haven't read that.
I recommend it, especially if you have half an interest in baseball.
Actually, I have very little interest in baseball. It's one of my challenges.
It's only the first 50 pages.
Okay.
Now, let's assume you could invite a character or an author to dinner. Who would it be?
Interestingly, because I've already mentioned it, it would probably be Prospero. I've seen The Tempest probably about 8 times, and I've read it more than that. For me, it is the great play. Of course, there are many others, but it is so powerful for me. And the character of someone who has the ability to use magic, and then, as he puts it, abjures it and decides no longer to do that and to re-enter a world where he will be, I suppose in some ways, an average nobleman. I just find that so remarkable. And the speeches are so beautifully written. So that would certainly be a character I'd be interested in having more to say with.
Do you think Prospero would sit still, though? I mean, and you know, because one of his characteristics is his energy.
Absolutely. But that's one of the things that I love about him, is that he's so full of life. Even as an older person, he's someone who's constantly reimagining the world around him. And no, he wouldn't sit still, so we might have to be walking while we chat.
But I think that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. Now, again, on your blog, you make this comment, which fascinated me, that you coincidentally read three books that were all published in 1973. So are you planning to write a book about 1973, or are you going to tell me it was sheer accident?
It genuinely was sheer accident. It's funny. I didn't even realize it until I started writing the last little review, or whatever one wants to call it, up about Iris Murdoch's The Black Prince. And I looked back and I thought, gosh, isn't that funny that I ended up reading these books all from that period? Now, perhaps it's not entirely funny, because that happens to be, for me, a time when, you know, I was, I'll call myself a young adult, even though I was a teenager. And I think the world of really seriously adult fiction and thinking through what that meant was coming alive for me. So it may not be, in some senses, a psychological happenstance.
I understand that. And certain writers, and I'm thinking of Philip Roth, can never escape the 1940s, because he's repeatedly returned to it constantly, from his earliest work, Goodbye Columbus, to, say, Plot Against America, which was published in 2004.
A great book, I thought. There is no doubt that aside from the music of the 70s, which is pretty awful generally, there are some exceptions. The time for me was actually hugely important, because it's when I went away to university. I always think of myself as basically being about 19. That's how I imagine myself. Sadly, I'm not that anymore.
But
if I had to place myself somewhere, that's where it would be. So the 70s are important.
Now, if you were going to write an autobiography, where would it begin?
Well, picking up on where we just left off, it would probably begin with me as an actor, I use the word loosely, as an actor in high school drama productions in the 1970s. That was, for me, I think, an opening of worlds that has never shut down. And in fact, I also have to speak very fondly of a particular teacher who was my drama teacher, who I think actually in many ways set me on a road that I've continued since then. So that's probably where I'd begin.
Can you recall any of the roles that you played, or the plays themselves?
In high school, I was Friar Lawrence in Romeo and Juliet, which was actually a very interesting role. It's a very subtle characterization, which I loved playing. I was in a play called Story Theater, which was out of Chicago in the 60s, and it was all set to sort of Beatles music and that sort of thing. It was very fun and very 70s. And then later, I was in a whole series of plays in university. I mentioned to the UBC, who interviewed me last week, that and they mentioned that I got a really bad review in a production of Hedda Gabler when I was in college. I played Eilert Lovberg. But lots of fun performances. Great learning for me.
Yes, I can recall myself, but it was a little earlier, not in university, but in grade school. And I know exactly what you're talking about.
Hi, I'm John K. Sampson from the Weaker Thans, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
Are you a current UBC grad student? If so, then listen up, because the Graduate Student Society lets UBC grads book rooms and spaces in the newly renovated grad student building. Be sure to take advantage of what the facility has to offer. The rooms come equipped with sound systems and can host up to 300 people. Even better, as grad students, you don't have to pay booking fees. Not a grad? Don't worry. The Tia Corner House is open to the public, as in the Corner Pub, opening earlier next year. For more information, contact booking manager Rob at bookings@gss.ubc.ca.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., CITR Art Director Megan Thomas and the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts@citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
Hi, I'm Gage Averill, Dean of Arts, and you're listening to UBC Arts on Air at CITR 101.9.
Professor Toop, when you were a student, what kind of reading were you doing? And I don't mean coursework. I don't mean assignments. Did you find that additional or adjacent reading was something that was nourishing for you?
Oh, absolutely. I've always been a voracious reader, to use the cliche. Right from when I was a kid, I just loved reading because I grew up in a very average suburban area outside of Montreal. It wasn't the most exciting place to grow up. It was a very nice place. It was very secure. But reading made me aware of a whole set of lives and worlds that were way beyond my own experience. And I just have always loved that. So, yeah.
What about libraries? Were you an early visitor to libraries? I myself was taken at a very young age, and my first, I'll say, semi-serious job was in a library. I say semi-serious, it was a public library, because I spent all my time reading instead of shelving. So I had to have a little lecture.
I was able to buy books when I was relatively young, so I did. And then I also obviously took books out of the school libraries, which were actually really good in my elementary school and then schools and then in high school. So I was really lucky. I had access to really good libraries right from an early age. My first job in college was also in a library. I actually was shelver in my library associated with my house where I was studying at Harvard. And then I actually became the assistant chief librarian. It was very exciting. But I loved it because on Sunday afternoons I could sit at the desk and, you know, people would be checking stuff out, but I just read.
I did the same thing. Did you ever think of maybe trying to collect in a certain area of interest, even as a young man? I mean, I meet students and they have these science fiction collections or Canadian history. I had a student a few years ago and he was a tremendous student of Canadian military history and was gathering all sorts of titles.
No, I've always been a really eclectic reader, although often focused, as I said, on fiction. No, I never really wanted to develop a particular collection. I just collect basically all the books I read.
Are you a visitor to bookstores as well when you travel?
Yes, always, yes. And here.
Of course, and here. A lot of people would like to know whether or not you read with a Kindle.
I don't yet, and that's not an ideological thing. I do have some visceral reactions to certain kinds of technologies. I think I'm known for not liking Twitter, for example. But I don't have any objection to the Kindle in theory. But I have to say that it's probably just what I'm used to. But I actually like books, and I this sounds silly, but I like books on shelves too. My wife Paula is frustrated with me because I have a lot of trouble letting go of books, and she does too, but I think she's a little more rigorous than I am. And so I have lots of books that mean something to me, and the idea of a book that's just an electronic impulse, it doesn't quite capture for me what a book is about, but I'll probably shift. I don't think I'm going to resist that forever.
Well, we have to, I suppose, move with the times.
Move with the times.
What do you think about the graphic novel? Do you ever read graphic novels?
I don't. And again, it's just, not having really been exposed at any stage in the past, I haven't got into that genre, so can't really comment.
Do you think that university should, perhaps with first-year students, focus on one text for all the students and use it as a kind of, I don't mean a great books program, but select a book, whether it's Aristotle or whether it's Rohinton Mystery, that would be a common experience for the students and then discussed in a variety of forms, whether they are symposia, whether they are lectures. What do you think about that? I know it has been done on occasion at some universities. I know Stanford has done it. Do you have any feelings about that?
I in theory, it's a nice idea. I wonder that it might feel artificial to a lot of students, in the sense that we have to accept that people come with different desires, aspirations, backgrounds, and trying to imagine that they all actually have a common experience or that all students should, for me, is not necessarily a place I'd want to head. I actually think that acknowledging the tremendous diversity of our students and their own interests is probably where I would head, rather than trying to, in a sense, impose a common experience that I'm not sure would feel real to a lot of students.
Okay. Are you currently writing a book?
I am. I'm writing a book in my own academic area with a co-author with whom I wrote my last book, whose name is Jutta Brunet. She's a professor at the University of Toronto. And we're writing a book on continuity and change in international law. And it's actually really fun. I spent a day last week with her in Toronto working on it, a Saturday, because I was there for other meetings during the week. And it was really fun to get back into it. What I like about it is it's a really big topic, because it's not just a narrow reading of, you know, a bunch of legal materials. It's really trying to understand what it is that we are seeking to accomplish in legal organization and legal normativity, and I really enjoy that kind of work.
Okay, and finally, do you have a book you would like to recommend?
Yes. I mentioned in my blog, actually, one of the very best books that I have read in the last decade is a book called The Hare with Amber Eyes, which is by an English potter, a guy who's a ceramicist, a very eminent one, world famous, named Duval. And he traces his family history through a collection of netsuke, which are, you know, very tiny Japanese carvings. And I found it absolutely gripping as a story and stunningly well written. I mean, this is a guy who's not a writer primarily, but one of the things that was so interesting is, because he's a potter, his descriptions of physical things and touching things is really beyond belief. It's the best I've ever read, I think. And it's also an incredibly interesting story, because his family, which he didn't know about, turns out to have been extremely influential historically. They were like the Rothschilds of banking in the 19th century, coming out of Odessa in Ukraine, then branches in Paris and Vienna. And I won't give too much away, but, you know, one of the central characters where he starts the story turns out to be a guy named Charles Efruzzi, who is actually the model for Swan by Proust. And then another character is a hugely important person in Vienna just as the Second World War is beginning. Of course, the family's Jewish. You can imagine, very complex and somewhat tragic history, but also a really beautiful capturing of eras and of family.
Sounds fabulous, and I have to confess it's one I haven't read, but others have talked about
it. I recommend it highly.
And you mentioned fiction several times. Are you planning to write a novel? And I hope not an academic novel.
It's a dreadful question to ask people, because I know so many people who say, yes, I want to write a novel. Unfortunately, the short answer is yes. I am actually interested. I have an idea. We'll see whether it ever goes anywhere.
Well, you know, we have an extremely good creative writing program here.
I know we do, and I've been very blessed to be able to read quite a number of the books that have been produced. Cellist of Sarajevo, for example, a couple of years ago, then Annabelle Lyons' work. Now, really, we're very fortunate with the people we have here.
Well, that should be inspiration. Thank you again, Professor Stephen Toop.
Okay, I'll give us a few more minutes.